This is episode number 58 of the Fearless Presentations podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on Fearless Presentations, Doug Stannert.
Welcome to the Fearless Presentations podcast. I'm Doug Stannert, CEO of the Leaders Institute and Fearless Presentations. And this is the podcast that helps people just like you eliminate public speaking fear and become leaders within their industry by becoming more professional speakers and presenters. This is episode number 58. And on this episode, we're going to cover a few secrets for presenters who speak English as a second or even a third language. So by the way, if you're a native English speaker, the tips that I'm going to give you will also make it much easier for you to design presentations, but the focus is going to be on reducing miscommunication based on accents and translations and that kind of thing. So the podcast is brought to you by fearlesspresentations.com. I mentioned on the last podcast that we're really ramping up our YouTube channel. We're trying to put out a few presentation skills videos each week. So if you haven't yet subscribed, this would be a great time to do that. Just go to YouTube, enter the phrase Fearless Presentations into the search bar, and when you access the channel, just hit the subscribe button. Now, for those of you who've been listening to me for a while, you can kind of see what I look like, kind of match up my face to the voice and everything. So looking forward to having you subscribe to the YouTube channel. I think it could be very, very helpful for you. By the way, we also have Fearless Presentations coming up in Houston and the Houston class and the Charlotte class that are coming up in the very near future are actually full. So they're no more space available in those, but we do still have space in Tampa, Atlanta, Detroit, Seattle. We also have classes coming up in Dublin, Ireland, and London in the UK. The last few classes of the year are going to be in Indianapolis and New York. And then after the new year, we've got classes in Dallas, LA, DC, Kansas. I was going to say Kansas City, but I guess since I did LA and DC, I should probably say KC as well. So LA, DC, KC, just to kind of be consistent. We also have San Antonio. Okay, nobody says SA, but still, if you didn't hear your city, by the way, just go to fearlesspresentations.com, look at the seminar schedule, and if you want to attend any of those classes, do the same thing. Go to fearlesspresentations.com, look at the seminar schedule, and look for a class that's available for you. Once that class is full, you know, we can't allow any more people to go into it, so we limit it to about 10 people. So if you're interested in any of those classes, make sure and register for them right away. So let's get on with today's podcast. So the topic today is a real step-by-step way to help people with English as a second language, ESL presenters, help them create a more confident and professional presentation. And what we've done is, what I've done is I've created 7 really good tips that you can follow. The first 4 of those tips are going to be things that, whether English is your first language or second language or third language, doesn't really make that much difference. They're going to help you no matter what language you speak. The last 3, though, those last 3 that we're going to cover are going to be things that are going to be specifically geared toward the ESL presenter so that he or she can really gain some confidence speaking. But let me kind of give you some background on this, because this topic came from, it was a suggestion from a podcast listener, somebody who's been listening to quite a few podcasts, sent me an email a couple weeks ago and said, "Hey, I love your podcast. Look at your videos on YouTube and great information. But I'm wondering if you do anything for folks where English is not their first language." And so I basically was going to reply back to this email just by giving him some links to some of the blog posts that we've done on that topic. And I was kind of surprised to see that although early on in our career, in my career anyway, we did a bunch of stuff on ESL presentations, we haven't really done anything in the last couple of years. So I guess it's time to get back to our roots. And so the things that happened that were kind of interesting very early on in the history of the Fearless Presentations class was the very first thing that happened was funny, because we were expanding really, really quickly. So we were teaching classes in London and Dublin, which we still do. We were teaching classes throughout Canada as well. In fact, one of my instructors was born in Ottawa, so he was a native French speaker. And he started working for the class. And so he wanted to be able to teach the class in French in Ottawa and in Montreal. So we created all of the content. We translated all of our content and everything. And he was teaching a number of classes in both of those cities for about a year or so. And then he got the idea to go to Paris to teach the class as well. And so we promoted our first Fearless Presentations class in Paris. And I think this was probably maybe 2005, I'm guessing, somewhere around that time period. And of course, Martin flew all the way over to Paris, and he's about 10 minutes into the class. And all of a sudden, one of his class members kind of raises his hand and kind of says, is this whole class going to be in English? And I think they were kind of surprised because the people, there were about seven or eight people in the class, and every single one of them were kind of confused when he started teaching the class in French. And one of the other people in the class kind of spoke up at the same time and said, yeah, if we wanted to learn how to do presentations in French, we could have gone to, you know, half dozen other companies or other classes somewhere within, you know, 20 kilometers of where we're at now. And so Martin ended up kind of adjusting on the fly and teaching that entire class in English. So the first class that we did in Paris, about 97% of it was taught in English. And it was because the people that were coming to the class knew that the Leaders Institute was an American company. They wanted to learn the quote unquote American way. They wanted to learn how we present so that they could be better business presenters, because English was fastly becoming the language of the business world, especially in when the European Union was really kicking and all that kind of stuff. So that was the first thing that happened. So these folks that were going through the class were native French speakers. Some of them were native German speakers that wanted to learn how to speak in English more effectively. And so we taught the same Fearless Presentations class for them that we did for everybody else. Worked really, really well for them. The second thing that happened was less than a year later, we got a contract to work with Capital One here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where we're based. And the first class that we did, it had a mix of a lot of different people. You know, most of them were, you know, from right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but there were about half the class were from other countries. Most of them were from China and India. And the thing that we kind of noticed was that the class went really, really well. In fact, we got such great feedback from the folks there at Capital One that we got such good feedback that they hired us to do like three or four other classes within a year. But what happened was I was the one that was doing the main teaching since it was right here at home. And the second class that I taught, instead of having that mixture of different nationalities, almost everybody in the second class were from China or India. And then the third class was the same way. So when the third class came around, I kind of called the HR person. I said, hey, just out of curiosity, it looks like you're doing a lot of hiring overseas. And she said, oh, yeah, we're doing a bunch of that. And I said, I kind of noticed that there's a high concentration of folks from other countries that are in the Fearless Presentations class. And she kind of laughed and she said, yeah. She said, those first four or five people or so that we put through your class, once they went through that class, it became so much easier to understand them when they were presenting that we decided to make sure that everybody who has English as their second language comes through your class in the next couple of years. I was like, oh, wow, it was a great contract, but that's really not what the class was designed for. And in fact, it wasn't until much, much, much later, maybe two or three years later or so, that we had a few speech therapists on our staff that kind of looked at what we were doing and they kind of explained to us exactly why the original Fearless Presentations class was so good at accent reduction. And the reason why is because when people get really, really nervous, we'll cover this later in the podcast, when people get nervous, they go with what they know, which a lot of times they'll slip back into the patterns from the original language that they learned to speak. And that's where the accent can get really, really intense. So by reducing the nervousness of the people in that class, it became a great accent reduction class as well, even though, that, like I said, that's not really what it was designed for. It works really, really well as that. So in those, that 2, 3, 4 years or so that we were teaching a lot of English as a second language presentation classes, we picked up a few things that work really well in helping people that are non-native English speakers, helping them present more effectively. And so this is a kind of a summary of what we came up with. So the first four things that we're going to cover are going to be things that if you've listened to the podcast before, if you've watched any of our videos on YouTube, if you've done any of our online classes or in-person classes, these things are going to sound real familiar because these are the basic steps and designing a presentation. But I'm going to focus a little bit more on why these things help the person where English is not his or her first language as well. So the very first thing is you got to start with a good title. And when I say a good title, the title has to have a focus on the audience. It's got to be something that the audience is interested in finding out about or interested in learning about. So what I typically do in the Fearless Presentations classes is I will have people come up with a kind of a general title, what they would normally do. And then we go back and we refine that title. Sometimes we refine it 2, 3, 4 times until it's really, really audience focused. So it needs to be a statement that you can prove, and you want to have a benefit or a result or a reason why the audience should listen to the presentation. So the very first thing that we do in the class is we take that original title that somebody has come up with and we have them ask a few questions about it. The first question is a three-letter word. It's just why. Why on earth would anybody care about this title? Whatever you come up with, you have to be able to answer the question why. And if you understand the why, you can make that a part of the presentation title and the title will be much, much better. So basically, you gotta ask yourself, if I'm sitting through this presentation for an hour or for 20 minutes or however long your presentation is, if I'm sitting through that presentation, if I'm the person in the audience, why would I care about this? What would I want to learn? What would be the major benefit to me? You want to ask, you know, those kind of questions about the topic that you're presenting on. And then the answer to those questions kind of become the title. So I'll give you a good example of this. This was actually a person in our class, in one of my classes 2-3 weeks ago. He worked in for the Cedar Association. This was an organization that promoted the use of cedar as in building products. And one of the things, and his original title that he came up with was okay, right? It wasn't a bad title, but we refined it over and over again to make it even better. So the title that he came up with was How to Extend the Life of Cedar. You know, well, I mean, obviously, if you're a cedar contractor, that might be interesting, but it wasn't very specific. It was very general. And so that presentation, trying to narrow it down to something that would be really, really interesting to the audience would be very difficult. So I asked him those questions. I said, okay, why would the audience care about this? What would be the major benefit to them? Who is it that would be listening to this and what would they want to get out of it? And after a few minutes of coaching, he came up with a little bit more specific presentation title that actually worked much, much, much better. So small change that made a big difference. The title that he came up with was How to Extend the Life of Your Cedar Roof to Up to 40 Years. So that gave a little bit more clarity about what he was going to be talking about. He wasn't just talking about cedar in general or a tree or something like that. He was talking about a cedar roofing product, like cedar shingles or something like that. And he was talking about how to extend the life of those shingles for up to 40 years. That made it much more interesting to that particular audience that he was going to be delivering to. So if he was delivering this to contractors or roofers or a homeowner who just got a cedar roof, now all of a sudden that person is going to be way more interested in this topic than extending the life of cedar, right? So making it just a little bit more specific makes it more interesting for the audience. And so that leads you right in. Once you get that very specific result-oriented title for your presentation, the second step is that you want to come up with just a few key concepts that you're going to try to get across to the audience. You can't cover everything under the sun about the topic. So going back to that example that we just talked about, the extending the life of the roofing, or the cedar roof anyway, we would say, okay, so if you were going to teach somebody how to extend the life of the cedar roof up to 40 years, what would be the number one most important thing that a contractor, a roofing contractor, or a homeowner would need to do to extend the life of that room, that roof? And then once this guy explained that to the audience, then what would be the second most important thing and the third most important thing? So basically, you're narrowing down the content of your presentation from 10, 15, 20, 30, 100 different bullet points down to just a few, 3 things, 4 things, 5 things, a few key concepts that you can get across to the audience. Now, this is where it gets very important to do these first 2 steps for the English as a second language presenter, because the concepts that you come up with, those bullet points, just like with the title, you want to make them into a complete sentence, a complete statement that you can prove. So whatever that very first thing is that the person could do to extend the life of that shingle or of the roof. Let's say it's to use the correct fasteners. What most people will do is they'll just put some cheat notes down for themselves as a bullet point, and they'll just put the word fasteners or proper fasteners or something like that. Well, it doesn't tell us anything. So it's going to cause a challenge, especially if English is not your first language, because if all you've got is that little one or two word cheat note down as your bullet point, number one, it doesn't help the audience understand exactly what you're going to get across to them. But the main thing is, though, that now you have to remember the complete bullet point. You have to remember that concept and be able to explain it. So now you're taking those couple words, you're creating an explanation, and then you have to translate that explanation as well. So that makes it much more difficult to deliver the presentation. So what I suggest that people do, whether English is your first language or second language or third language, whatever, is to create a bullet point that is a complete sentence. It's a complete statement. So let's say it had something to do with fasteners, and just so you know, I don't remember exactly what the bullet point was that this presenter came up with, but let's just say it had something to do with fasteners, and it was let's say the bullet point was something like, using the proper fasteners will cause fewer instances of destruction or something like that. Something, you know, so basically it's a statement now that instead of just a couple words, it's a statement now that can be proven. So you want to do that. You want to create a provable statement with your bullet point. So if English is not my first language and I'm looking at my topic and my key bullet points, if I got 3 or 4 or 5 bullet points, all I really have to do is read that bullet point. I don't have to translate it. I don't have to interpret it. I don't have to explain it to the audience. It's something that's very easy for the audience to understand because it's a complete sentence. So that makes it a whole lot easier. So the third thing that you want to do in order to kind of design your presentation better, especially if English is not your first language, is you want to, after you have those really cool bullet points that are audience focused and you have a really good title that helps you get to those bullet points, the next step is to come up with an example or a story for each one of those bullet points. And specifically, if you can come up with an example or bullet point from your own personal experience, it makes it a whole lot easier for you to deliver that presentation. So I mentioned earlier in the introduction about how people, when English is not their first language, when they get nervous, their accents increase pretty dramatically. Again, that's because when we get nervous, we go with what's most comfortable for us. And English, if it's not your first language, is not going to be the most comfortable. So you're going to be speaking English words, but you'll be more likely to use the cadence and the delivery that you grew up with in your first language. And so that's where the accent comes in. That's where the miscommunication or the difficulty to understand somebody where English is not their first language really comes in. So if we can keep that nervousness reduced, we can make that accent be much less pronounced. And one of the fastest ways, the easiest ways anyway, to help people reduce that public speaking fear, that public speaking nervousness, is to tell stories. The reason why is because when you're given an example or a story in your presentation, you don't have to really memorize anything, because if you're speaking from your own personal experience, all you really have to do is kind of play the video in your head, play that memory in your head, and just recite back or tell the audience what you're seeing. You don't have to memorize a bunch of bullet points or a bunch of data or a bunch of concepts. You're just relaying back that incident that happened in your own personal experience. That's a lot easier to do than to give a series of bullet points or data or facts or statistics or any of that kind of stuff. So the more instances of stories or examples that you put into your presentation, the less nervous you're likely to be, the easier it's going to be for you to communicate the message, and the less pronounced your accent is going to be. So basically you want to, you know, do those first three things are critical in the design process. Come up with a really good audience focused title, come up with just 3, 4, 5 key bullet points about each one of about the most important things that the audience needs to know about your title. And then thirdly is to come up with an example or story. And then you've got a good skeleton of a presentation that you shouldn't have to practice a whole lot. And it should be fairly easy for you to deliver that skeleton of a presentation anyway, because when you're telling your audience what you're going to talk about, when you're doing an introduction, you're just reading the topic and the three key bullet points or four key bullet points or five key bullet points from your slide. That's it. So it takes a lot of the stress, a lot of the nervousness off. And then you go back to each bullet point and tell an example or a story about each one. It builds rapport with your audience. It makes it more interesting for them. It makes it more fun for them to listen to, and they're going to understand you a whole lot better. So that those are just kind of the basics for designing a presentation in general. But if English is your second language or third language, then those things can be really, really helpful. Okay. And then the last thing that you want to do in order to design the presentation is you want to go back to each one of your bullet points or each one of those key concepts and come up with some other type of evidence other than just the story. The story's good and it's going to be the backbone of what you're talking about, but you want to cover a few, at least one, maybe two other pieces of evidence as well. You want to reinforce that bullet point so you're sure that the audience agrees with you. So you want to give lots of evidence. So the different types of evidence that you can use here, you can pretty much use anything that helps you prove your point better. But these are some things that work really, 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 really well. So the first thing is an analogy. If you've got a good story, if you can back that story up with an analogy, that makes it fun for the audience. So we did a whole session a few podcasts back about analogies. And so if you're having any trouble with coming up with analogies, go back and listen to that podcast session because it's really good at helping you come up with these things. But these are comparisons. So basically, it's taking something that somebody is already familiar with and comparing it to that thing that you're trying to get to, that you're trying to explain to them to make it a little bit easier. So an analogy is kind of a comparison. The reason why these things work so well is because they're kind of fun and they get us thinking a different part of our brain thinking about the concepts that we're talking about. And that's why they kind of work. So like, for instance, one of the things that we use in our classes is for this particular set of tips, the things that you want to do to add more evidence. I use the analogy where I say, well, it's kind of like you're an attorney and you're presenting your case to the jury. Those bullet points would be like the motive and opportunity and things like that the attorney needs to present to the jury. And then these concepts, the stories and the analogies and examples and all that kind of stuff, those are your evidence. That's what you're using to prove your bullet points. So basically I'm comparing a presentation to a trial, which, because they're not really closely related, it makes it more interesting when you make that comparison. So analogies can be a good way to reinforce a bullet point that you've already delivered. A second thing that you can use is you can use any type of other visual aid with your PowerPoint slideshow. So like a poster, a prop, a sample, any of those kind of things can work. A quote from an authority in the industry can be very helpful. So if you quote somebody who's an expert on the topic that you're presenting, or sometimes just a motivational quote can work. But most of the time you want to quote experts in order to reinforce the bullet point that you're talking about. You can also use some type of audience participation or audience question. So basically, if you ask an open-ended question of your audience, you can get them to respond, and that their responses or their opinions can help you reinforce your bullet point as well. And then finally, you can also use facts, statistics, that kind of thing. Those are okay and they're good, but the thing about facts and statistics is that when people hear them, we think that that's great proof, but in reality, when we tell somebody a statistic, there's automatic, because most people do this and a lot of statistics are kind of made up. You know, most people have gotten to the point now when they hear a statistic about something, they question it right away. They don't necessarily believe you. So if you're going to give a fact, a statistic, some type of data to reinforce your bullet point, you want to tell your audience where you got that. Tell it to them in a story format, and it makes it a little bit easier. So if, let's say, for instance, if my bullet point is that profit went up 10%, then I would give an example, something that happened in this previous quarter that influenced that profit margin going up so much. And if I just tell that example or story, it reinforces that statistic or that piece of data is really true. So basically those kind of things are things that you can add into your skeleton of a presentation to make it more believable, to make it more thorough. to make it you less likely to get a bunch of questions from your audience about the validity of your bullet points. So now keep in mind that you don't have to go overboard on this. You don't have to give like five or six different pieces of evidence for each one of your bullet points. Typically one or two will work. I typically have people in my classes prepare three pieces of evidence, a story, and then two other things. And then most likely when they actually deliver the presentation, they're only going to give two of those three things. They'll keep the third one kind of in their hip pocket in case somebody asks a question. So we're over preparing. We're preparing more than what we're going to actually deliver to the audience. So keep that in mind. So you don't have to bombard your audience with a bunch of data. It's much better to just give a couple pieces of evidence and then move on to the next bullet point. That works really, really well. Okay, so those are the first four things. Design a good title, come up with your key bullet points or key concepts for each one of those for the title, and then for each one of those bullet points, come up with a story example, and then another piece of evidence, at least one other piece of evidence to prove those things. And now you've got a really well-designed presentation. That's a very easy to follow presentation. You don't have to use a lot of memorizing stuff. You don't have to translate any of your concepts into English. So especially if English is not your first language, those are some really key things to do. These last three things that we're going to cover are going to be things that are specific to the English as a second language presenter that should make it a little bit easier for you to deliver the presentation. So after you have that presentation design, the next thing that you want to do is you want to look up any vocabulary that you came across that you might be having trouble with. Easiest way to do this, by the way, is with Google now. Google is really cool because if you start typing in a phrase into Google, it will try to auto-complete that for you. If anybody else in the world has been searching for something similar, it tries to auto-complete it for you and fill it out. So that's an easy way to kind of check your vocabulary. Just kind of look it up on Google and it makes it a little bit easier. I'll give you a good, and by the way, the vocabulary just in general typically is not as challenging as specific kind of unique things about the English language that are kind of weird, like idioms. If you've never come across the word idiom, basically this is one of those, it's a phrase that is used that doesn't technically mean what the words say. It's something that's more figurative. It's something like, an example of this is here in the United States, we say this weird phrase where we say, if it's raining really heavy, it's raining cats and dogs, right? There's really not cats and dogs falling from the sky. It just means that it's raining hard. I have no idea where that idiom came from, but it's weird. It doesn't make any sense. So if English is not your first language and you come across an idiom like that, it's very confusing to translate that. It's kind of hard to translate it. So that's one of the things that is more difficult than any of the other things that happened in presentations. So you want to be very careful about the idioms that are being used. If you're not familiar with it, I would encourage you to kind of eliminate those. I give you a good example of this one. I mentioned earlier about one of our early instructors that started working for the Fearless Presentations Company was a guy named Martin out of Toronto, native French speaker. And what's funny about him is that he actually learned to speak English by watching television when he was a teenager. So he never actually took an English class, but he was very easy to communicate with. In fact, he had very little accent just because he had been speaking English for so long because, you know, he was, you know, being in Canada, you know, the part of Canada that he grew up in was a native French speaking part, Ottawa. But still, there were a lot of people speaking English. So it was easier for him to practice it. So he had a fairly good grasp of the English language, but still not his first language. So the idioms he sometimes had trouble with. So we had this challenge come up very early on where it was probably some situation where we were going to hold a class and then somebody backed out and then we had to cancel class or something, you know, something that was kind of odd and unexpected. And I sent him an email about that and he responded back with the idiom, well, that's the way the cookie grumbles, like with G-R-U-M-B-L-E-S, if I spelled that correctly, verbally, grumbles instead of crumbles, which it was cute and it was kind of funny. So I since he and I have had and still have a really good relationship, I replied back in a funny way and I said, why on earth would a cookie grumble? And then he, realizing that he had made a mistake and meant to say crumble, he kind of responded back with a reply that said, why would cats and dogs fall from the sky? You know, so it was kind of a funny way to see how somebody who is not a native English speaker would have a few challenges with the idiom. So be careful about that. By the way, my response to him, I had to come up with some new retort. I had to come back and I couldn't think of anything. So since I knew he was a French speaker, I just replied back with touche. So anyway, so you can, you know, have a little fun with it. But if idioms are giving you a challenge, just kind of eliminate those. One of the other things that you can do that will help a lot is you want to use really simple and concise language. So the next tip is to get rid of the jargon that's in your presentation. Get rid of those weird acronyms and stuff like that, because that's going to cause challenges for you when you present. When I was learning to speak professionally, when I was kind of working with professional speakers in order to become a professional speaker, my mentor, a guy who was training me, he said, "Hey, if you want to be a great speaker, a great communicator, you want to eliminate what he called the Harvard words." Harvard is a, you know, very prestigious university. And so when folks from Harvard speak, they speak with big multi-syllable words, right? Syllable words. So it makes it more complicated. And what he was saying was that you want to kind of eliminate that from your presentation. The interesting thing about why he was telling me to do that was totally backwards to what I would have thought. What he said was that when people speak at a really high level like that, most of the time it's because they feel inadequate in the room. They feel nervous. They feel like, if you think about it, let's say I'm a new doctor. I've just graduated from medical school, and maybe it's my first or second year after graduating from school, and I'm an intern or resident or something like that, intern maybe, and I have to give a presentation to other doctors. Well, I don't want those doctors to know that this is just my first or second year, so I'm going to use really big words so they know how smart I am. It's an inferiority complex that we have. That's one of the reasons why we do this. And then we justify it by saying, well, I don't really want to, you know, I don't want to talk down to my audience. So I'm going to make sure that I'm speaking at their level, at their high level. Both of those things are falsities. Those are things that just add complexity to your presentation, because you never really know for sure the level of every single person that's in your audience as far as their communication level or their experience level in your industry. So if you get rid of that jargon, it makes it a whole lot easier. So I would encourage you to kind of speak to your audience. The technique that I use is I speak to my audience as if the audience is in the fourth grade. If I know a fourth grader can understand it, you know, a 10, 11 year old kid can understand it, then I'm communicating very, very effectively and they're going to understand it. And I have never once, not even once in my career, had anybody come up to me after my presentations or anybody, you know, receive any feedback on written formats or forms or anything like that, where somebody responded by saying, you know, you talked in a really simple way. Most of the time they're going, oh my God, it was so easy to understand. And so it's the exact opposite of what you would expect. So get rid of the jargon, speak in a very clear, easy to understand language. The last thing that we're going to cover is the practice session. This is probably the most important thing that you need to keep in mind if English is not your first language. It's very critical that you want to practice your presentations at least once. I would encourage you, though, to practice it maybe two or three times. Now, if you've been through any of my public speaking classes or listened to me on a podcast over and over again, you'll notice that a lot of times when I'm encouraging people to practice, I encourage them to practice in two ways. Practice just once. And the reason why I say just once is because there's a lot of spontaneity in the way that we speak. So the more spontaneous we are when we're communicating, the more real life it is, the more interesting it is for the audience. And so if you practice 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, it's going to be as though you're memorizing this presentation. You're going to be memorizing the content, and it's going to be a little bit more dry. It's going to be a little bit more sedate, a little bit more robotic. And so you only want to practice once, maybe twice if you're practicing. So that's what I typically teach. If English is not your first language, I would encourage you to practice at least a couple more times. So I would say 2 to 3 times is usually a good rule of thumb. The second thing I usually tell people about practice is that you want to practice with a person. And for English as a second language, it's important that you practice with a person who is a native English speaker. The reason why that is kind of critical to the practice is because you'll be able to read the facial gestures that the person is giving you as you're communicating with this native English speaking person. if they understand what you're saying, you're going to see it. They're going to go, oh, yeah. They're going to nod their head or something like that. You'll get that positive feedback that you've communicated effectively. And if you're confusing them, you'll kind of notice that as well, just by watching the way that they respond to the words that you're using. So it helps you make adjustments to the presentation and help you be more communicative. You know, you'd be a better communicator if you do that. And so after you do that once, you'll make a few corrections. And then you do it a second time, it should be easier now for the person to understand you. And then if you happen to have to do it a third time, it should be crystal clear. It should be very, very easy. So practice with a person, practice with a native English speaker 2-3 times, and you'll typically do fairly well when you present. So those are the 7 things that you can do to become a better speaker if English is not your first language. If you have trouble with any of these, by the way, if any of these are become a challenge for you, if you still feel really nervous when you're presenting, I would encourage you to go to a class. The best way to become better at speaking in front of a group is in a controlled environment like a class. That way you can experiment without a whole lot of risk. You can get good coaching from a professional speaker, get good feedback, make some changes. And every single time that you make one of those positive changes, you're going to get better, better, and 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 better as a speaker. So I would encourage you to take a class. And if you happen to be in the United States, Canada, Europe, then we have Fearless Presentations going all the time. So you can look up our schedule on fearlesspresentations.com. Just hit the seminar schedule button and see what classes are coming up in your area, and it should really, really help you. So thanks a lot for being a part of the Fearless Presentations podcast. We'll see you next week.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.